Connecticut Academy of Arts and Science, at that link there, you can get this transcript of his talk. And he says the living cell, including a living human organism, is a system in flux equilibrium, where matter and energy are taken in from the environment and metabolized and partly assimilated, partly degenerated, and the waste products are given back to the environment. Now, this is a very general statement, but everything that we deal with in terms of human life and health and well-being is based on these larger principles. He goes on to say, from a physicist's perspective, there are big differences between how a physicist might look at a problem and how the biologist and how biology presents the case. And he says the even the smallest of the living cells is a magic puzzle box. It is full of mysteries. And any one cell represents more than a historical, than a physical event. It's a collection, it's an entire history of life that is at play in any one cell. And he cautions us by saying, a living cell carries with it the experiences of billions of years of experimentation by its ancestors. And you cannot explain it so easily, the workings of a cell. And a biochemist's vista is one of infinite horizon. You have to keep exploring, and within that large infinite horizon, we will come up to some wonderful surprises. These complex systems continue to be a challenge to understand, like the human being in health and disease, and in the case of Vincenzo, in his simple problem that was resolved with celery. And people have attempted to give us the rules. Here is the 10 rules of systems biology proposed by Dennis Noble. And I've listed the 10 there, and you can read all about them at that Wikipedia article and several other locations on the website. I particularly want to draw your attention to that last point there, which is there are many more rules to be discovered. A genuine theory of biology does not exist yet. So when we see a certain effect, then we must keep our mind open to try and understand how it is and how it comes about. And this is open-mindedness that is required, is presented in several locations. This is here in Cambridge at the University's School of Clinical Medicine. That's the entrance on the left. And on the right-hand side is a section of a portrait that hangs in the main staircase of the stairwell of the building. And it's a section of the portrait of Sir Keith Peters, who's 25th Regius Professor of Physics, and he was professor from 1987 to 2005. The text on the left-hand corner is from an oration by an earlier Regius Professor of Physics, 1892 to 1925, Professor Clifford Allport. And those words are very interesting. Medicine was now to prove her lineage as the mother of natural science and the truth of the saying of Hippocrates. To know the nature of man, one must know the nature of all things. Now, Vincenzo started off by asking me, what is Ayush systems? What is Ayurveda? These are systems which prescribe to this philosophy, that is, if you want to understand the human being and the nature of life, then you have to understand the nature of everything that is around us. Now, in terms of celery, here in Cambridge, there's a family, that's the name of the family, G's. They have been growing celery for about 50 plus years. They now have a protected UK geographic origin label. And if you look globally, this is what is known about celery. On the top left-hand side, you can see those yellow dots. These are parts of the world where celery is grown today. And the densest part is where, it's shown here around Europe, around the Mediterranean, which is where celery originated. And then you can see places where it's grown most popularly, South Africa, or parts of Australia, China, towards Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, and then in the New World, in both North America and South America. The genome of this plant has been sequenced, so we know about the DNA and we know a lot of the biochemistry in it, and shown on the right-hand side is one chemical of the many, many chemicals that are found in celery. It's called epigenin, and it's a very small molecular mass of about 250, thereabouts, and it's known to have various beneficial effects. It's an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, chemo-preventive ability. Now, I want to focus a little bit on that one compound, epigenin, and available at that website below. This is a very brief outline about epigenin, that epigenin is most often used for mental health issues. It says epigenin is a bioflavonoid that appears to reduce anxiety. It affects the immune health and modulates hormones. It's a very generic term, not how we would present it scientifically, but valuable for many aspects of what we are discussing today. And it says it's found in chamomile tea. It's a very strong source of epigenin. And a variety of vegetables and herbs, including celery. Epigenin is stable when consumed as part of the diet, but unstable when isolated from its source. It means the moment you try to purify this, we lose its structural integrity. And that is sometimes a problem with many, many chemicals. Now, how does this work? Again, at that web page, at examine.com, you can find a brief outline about how it affects your immune health, neurologic health, hormone health, how it acts as an anti-inflammatory, etc. There is much more information that's now available in literature databases and the scientific literature database. But this is just a simple outline to one of the chemicals that we know is working in a positive way to promote health. Now, a second chemical, this is a difficult one to get, because most of the times we consume celery, we are eating the stalk of the leaf. This chemical is found in the seeds of celery, abbreviated as NBP, N-butylthalidine. And you can see the different isomers of that chemical shown there on the right-hand side. What is interesting about this chemical, particularly in terms of published literature, if you look between 1979 and today, 2023, you will see here on the left-hand side the increasing number of publications. And this is proving to be a very interesting molecule. And if you go to the clinical trials website, at the National Library of Medicine, you will find why this molecule that comes from the seeds of celery is so exciting. There are 24 studies now, clinical trials that are going on in America, that is all related to acute cerebral stroke, cerebral infarcts, brain infarcts. And interestingly, almost all of these studies are being sponsored by groups from China. You can see on the right-hand side here, all the universities who are sponsoring the study. And particularly interesting, I've just taken only six of those studies, and I've highlighted one special study, which is very important. It's about the subcortical vascular dementia, a small cerebral small vessel disease. And the trials are going on, and it is recommended now in China as a routine treatment. Now, I leave those two chemicals and move on to the annoying part of the celery, which is the celery stalk and the fiber, the cell wall, and all that material that is there in the hard cell wall of the plant. And I want to point you to a study that is from Russia. And this is from collaborators, a collaboration between researchers at the Institute of Physiology at the Komi Science Center and the N.D. Zelensky Institute of Organic Chemistry in Moscow. Very, very established institutions with a very long history, and they're looking at the cell wall components of celery stick. And what do they find? They find that the cell wall is, as with many plant cell walls, it's a pectic, sorry, what happened here, Marciano? Apologies. Let me start again, don't worry. Let me. AP mama. And interestingly, they find in a rat model or in a mouse model, they have found that this polysaccharide has a property to reduce interleukin 1 beta and increase interleukin 10. Now, these two chemicals, they have followed for a special reason, because interleukin 1 beta is associated with autoinflammation. And interleukin 10 is an anti-inflammatory cytokine. So we've looked at the plant, we've looked at where it is grown, we've looked at one chemical from the stem, we've looked at one chemical from the seed, and here that the cell wall component and what is there. So the properties, anti-inflammatory and reducing autoinflammatory cytokines. So I'm going to leave that aside and come to where we are today. In Cambridge, we are celebrating the 70th anniversary of the discovery of the structure of DNA. This has been a big force in all of biology. Shown on the left of the photograph is Watson and Crick, the names that almost every school child knows today, 1953, and much later on the right-hand side. This iconic image and the research work based on the knowledge about DNA has reached where we are today. This is a paper published on the 11th of May, 2023, where we have now the ability, technology to sequence individual genomes, DNA from any given individual, and look at and compare different genomes from different individuals. And what we see are amazing differences. Every individual is unique. Every individual is different. And these mutations span the entire genome. So we, having started with hoping that we could understand the secret of DNA, we are today at a point where we know that every genome is different. And this poses big challenges. Shown here, an event that was held in 1996 on cardiovascular disease prevention. And today we know that many aspects of cardiovascular diseases are inflammatory problems. And how do we reconcile what we see in personal genomes, where every genome is different? How do we approach this whole problem of disease prevention, particularly in the context of aspects of human biology that is beyond our reach and highly variable, shown on the left-hand side, publication from our colleagues at Prague about the challenges in biology that is related to what we can observe. Keep in mind, 70 years ago, we didn't know what was DNA. We couldn't observe it. But then we managed to understand what it is. And that horizon of cognition is both a strength and a limitation to what we can understand about biology. For instance, on the right-hand side, if we look at the blood pressure sensors, the baroreceptors in the aortic arch, what we are learning today is the kind of complexity that is there and the kind of complexity that is maintained in balance and perhaps also lost when we tend towards disease. Shown here at the bottom are all those pressure sensors and ion sensors and ion channels, all at the end of one little synaptic end of one of the many baroreceptor neurons that's located in that part of the heart. It might seem that these will remain a challenge, and we have to find better ways to understand the workings of the human body. This is where we are today. This is a paper published from Cambridge on the cellular landscape of the adult human heart. And what is shown here are the number of cell types. We know today there are at least 11 major cell types in the heart. There could be many more. And interestingly, we see all kinds of fancy differences here between the atrium, the tissue of the atrium, and the ventricle. The cardiomyocytes are very different in these two parts of the tissue of the heart. And so on, the pericytes, the smooth muscle cells, the lymphoid cells, the immune cells that are resident in the heart. And particularly the fibroblasts. The fibroblasts and their interaction with the immune system is what helps maintain health of the heart. And this kind of complexity that we are seeing here about the interaction between the cardiomyocytes and the immune cells, these are all areas where the bits that we talked about celery, these are all areas where those chemicals can come and interact and provide health benefits. Shown here a study from China on how we get fibrosis, myocardial fibrosis, and diabetic cardiomyopathy. And they show in their study how there are different fibroblasts respond differently and how they lead to different types of complications. So on one hand, we have learned so much about the human body, in health and disease, and the different cell types and the kind of changes in the immune system, including changes in the immune system with the seasons of the year. As we go from summer to winter, we start to see more pro-inflammatory changes. Now, these challenges are not easy to resolve, and particularly in the context of the global. And this is where the Ayush system are starting to present themselves as a possible solution for global healthcare problems. And what the Ayush systems are also indirectly saying is health is different from healthcare, and health today is held a prisoner or a hostage by healthcare. Now, India has taken a global leadership in this position, and they have convinced the World Health Organization to set up a global center for traditional medicine, and this is located in this western state of Gujarat in the west of India. And earlier this year, 17th and 18th of August, there was an event, the first World Health Organization's Traditional Medicine Global Summit that took place. Now, what for me as an observer, what I found in this fascinating meeting was that we are identifying all the gaps in global healthcare. And we need to start to find new strategies closing these gaps. We need to rethink the narratives about health. Where does health come from? And the fact, as shown in my very early slides, about the fact that health has to be viewed as an emergent property from everything that is outside. And we cannot continue with this idea of fighting disease. This is an idea that will not work for the future. We cannot keep fighting the disease. Instead, we have to start thinking new ways of promoting health, maintaining health, preventing disease, and enabling new cures. And here comes the Ministry of Ayush, and you can locate more about the ministry at that web link I have shown you, ayush.gov.in. And some of the activities here shown recently, India was the president, held the presidency till last month. of the G20, and a lot was done in terms of promoting that idea of one earth, one family, one future, and trying to teach people about the immune boosting foods. What we are seeing with celery, it fits into that area of immune boosting food. And the other thing in terms of linking with lifestyle and environment, you know, a 21-day challenge of how you can change your lifestyle to match the environment and to help the environment. And all these are being promoted by the Ministry of Health. I invite all of you to study the details there. The Ministry also has research centers, and this is the research center, the Central Council for Research in Ayurvedic Sciences. And shown there are the two ministers. So it's the one is a cabinet minister on the left-hand side, Sri Sanawa, and on the right-hand side is the Minister of State for Ministry of Ayush, who's also in the Ministry of Women and Child Development, Dr. Munjapara Kalubai. Dr. Munjapara is a cardiologist, trained as an MD in cardiology, and he's very passionate about all these issues for health of the common man. India, as you well know, has today the world's largest population. It has 1.5 billion people, little more than China. And the Central Council for Research in Ayurvedic Sciences is an example of how a traditional knowledge is being taken into the research domain. The Central Council of the Ministry of Ayush, the Central Council for Research in Ayurvedic Sciences of the Ministry of Ayush, has 30 institutes working across the country in different areas. Together with other institutions, they have started curating all the medicinal plants. So celery is there within this list of medicinal plants. And in this website, medicinalplants.in, you can see a database, perhaps the world's largest database of medicinal plants. So over 7,000 botanical names and about 150,000 vernacular names of those plants, as used in the different systems of medicine. You can see Ayurveda here, and you can see Siddha medicine, Unani medicine, homeopathy, the undocumented folk medicine, and also Tibetan medicine. They have extracted details from all of these sources, and they have curated the medicinal aspects in this website here. Traditional Knowledge Digital Library, TKDL, and you can see again at that website, if you browse through, you can see the total number of formulations, almost 500,000 different formulations that are described from the traditional texts. Now, within the Ayush systems is also what a lot of people call the esoteric sciences, but these are esoteric for those who don't understand the finding that's shown in the center for many of you, for all of you who have studied medicine. That is the representation of the nervous system. But these ancient systems also talk about other aspects of the human body, certain emergent properties that control our health and well-being. Vincenzo briefly mentioned about these chakras and all these things, nadis and related aspects. Now, they have to be understood with the depth of knowledge that is present in the ancient sciences. Hey, Vincenzo.
You must close. We speak later.
Okay, close it. Okay. Thank you.
Ciao.
I stop here. Thank you.
Ciao, madame. Ciao. Thank you very much.